for the road as the race for the presidency 16 heats up and begins to narrow down to the general election. A foolhardy but utterly predictable narrative has erupted from Hillary's campaign. She seeks a race to the bottom, apparently betting her negatives are better than the Donald's. For example, her friends at the New York Times were lured into authoring a Trump debases women hit piece, which immediately blew up in their face. Yet this allowed a deft pivot from Trump to Bill's long history of sexcapades. And after history's greatest counterpuncher delivered, suddenly out pops sex offender Jeff Epstein like a deformed rodent crawling out of Chernobyl. Sex slaves. Epstein is the famous billionaire who hired the underage girls for a Florida massage and then went a bit farther and more with many other young girls on many occasions. And he was the recipient of an investigation and ended up being prosecuted and convicted of being a sex predator. Now he's a level three sex offender. And besides entrapping Prince Andrew and Alan Dershowitz in supposedly illegal minor shenanigans, he's also an education promoter who strangely combines science get-togethers with underage teen girls on his private island called Little St. James in the United States British Virgin Islands, or I guess it would be the United States Virgin Islands. Weirdly or not, Bill Clinton has reportedly visited this island nicknamed Orgy Island over 20 times. And now this all comes to the fore because Hillary stupidly put her friends at the Gray Lady up to an attack essay against Trump. Hillary's pain. So this is where the terrain gets rocky for Hillary. Hillary, understandably, yet bizarrely, claims she doesn't owe the world a defensive bill despite offering him up as her economic czar and VP and or VP. You can't claim to be a female victim of an unfair male-dominated world when you are helping victimize other females, correct? In addition, since the Clinton Chronicles have never been fully vetted by the mainstream media, there will be continuing revelations on stories well-known on the right that the left has simply never paid any attention to, and perhaps the biggest takeaway will be the narrative that uber-liberal Bill Clinton unleashed a reign of terror on unsuspecting women, many of them Democrats, that was utterly ignored because of his policies on social positions. He got a pass. After all, who could forget when now National Organization of Women turned their backs on Monica Lewinsky when she experienced workplace harassment, or her buddy, Linda Tripp. St. Hildebeest, but advantage to Trump. So where does this all go from here? Hillary has opened a can of whoop butt that now cannot be closed since it's a Pandora's box. From this point on, every anti-Hillary script ever devised is ratified. It's okay since the R word, rape, has been released. This is Hillary's worst nightmare, and she walked right into it like a smug, self-righteous robot into a buzzsaw. Now at every opportunity, Trump can go after the Clinton myth from Whitewater to Benghazi, throwing it into her face at every turn. Advantage who? So who will walk off with the prize? My gut says it's Donald, but it's way too early to tell. Stay tuned, sports fans. It will certainly be worth the price of admission. Good morning, 610. Kelly O'Connell. And so we've got a really weird narrative that's going on here. And we've got this... got this situation with the guy's name is Jeff Epstein, and he is a sex offender, and he's got a jet, and he's a multi-billionaire, and he's got some strange relationship with Alan Dershowitz, this Harvard professor who would defend OJ, such that Dershowitz was ultimately accused of sleeping with teen girls, and he got very upset, of course, and went after that. But Woody Allen has been on this island, believe it or not. So I guess all the so-called pedophiles are gathering out there. But they've done investigations. They convicted this guy. But Bill Clinton has still been on this guy's plane a number of times. And this guy had something like 10 or 20 phone numbers for Bill Clinton in his phone. So they think that Bill Clinton has spent a lot more time with this guy than anybody was really aware. And so I've got some reportage on that for you. But it's really amazing. It's amazing, especially when you consider that his wife Hillary is running for office, and the amount of scrutiny that that they were under, generally speaking. All right, so we have got I've got a little bit. All right, so let me just get on. I've got some Euro news here for you. And the news is on the Egypt flight that crashed. And there's a little doubt at this point that it was terrorism. And so, unfortunately, you know, as soon as you saw that thing just disappeared off the radar screen, you had to wonder, is it terrorism? I mean, you know, it just kind of, my heart sunk when I heard about it. So let me get to that here in just a moment. Of course, my machine is immediately throwing, immediately freezing up, but that goes without saying. So I'll tell you about this story with Jeff Epstein, and it is a really jaw-dropping story of a guy that owns a private island and flies young girls down there, and then the mother of one of these girls that was supposedly paid $300. Can you imagine that? $300 is all, I mean, not that there's a set price. I mean, it's all bad, but $300 to take away the innocence of some young girl. And what a group of guys this group that hangs out with is. All right, here's a little bit on terrorism likely causing the Egypt Air crash. Hold on one sec. All right, here we go. Check this out from Euronews.
The Americans are talking about a bomb, and Egypt's aviation minister thinks terrorism is the likely cause. But what's clear is 66 people have died in the crash of an Airbus in the waters off Egypt. 15 are French, and Paris and Cairo have vowed to work together to find the culprits and the plane. The Greeks have recovered some debris 230 miles south of the island of Crete in Egyptian waters. So the onus on finding the Paris to Cairo A320 lies probably with the Egyptians.
The situation properly, the possibility of having a different action or having a terror attack is higher than the possibility of having a technical.
The head of the Russian Secret Service, the FSB, agrees with Minister Sherif Fati. The plane fell off the radar when it entered Egyptian airspace. Within minutes, the alarm was raised as the crew was not responding to calls and it became clear the plane was in difficulties of some sort. Flight trackers revealed the plane had banked severely and lost height at around the time radar contact was lost. One merchant vessel reported seeing a bright explosion in the sky. A frigate of the Greek Navy is investigating this claim. President Barack Obama has offered U.S. assistance, including the use of an Orion spotter plane, to join Greek planes, crisscrossing the search system, and with a total of 12 nationalities involved. There is no shortage of offers of international help. In the meantime, it is the waiting game for everyone. Another air disaster has been added to the list of recent accidents in Egypt, and it will certainly build economic pressure on the authorities and security concerns. The cause of the accident will only be determined in the days to come.
All right, so what does it mean? I mean, I guess it stands for all the other terrorist attacks. These people are never going to quit. I mean, that's pretty obvious, so. You know, and I mean, the thing here is that when is Obama, when is Europe really going to get serious about this stuff? I mean, I have no idea. All I can go off is the comments that the president makes and the decisions that he gives. But by not wiping out ISIS, I think it really encourages this, you know, it encourages the world jihad. And now you might say, well, you can't wipe out ISIS. You know, the president said his goal was to contain them within 10 years. That sounds nuts to me, doesn't it? To you? Here's a little more on the Flight 804, second major Egypt Air incident in 2 months.
It's just 2 months since the last major incident involving Egypt Air. On March 29th, a domestic flight traveling from Alexandria to Cairo was hijacked and forced to land in Larnaca, Cyprus. The pilot of Egypt Air Flight 181 was threatened by a passenger, apparently wearing a suicide belt that later turned out to be fake. The passenger was later arrested after giving himself up. Witnesses say he threw a letter on the tarmac at Larnaca Airport, asking for it to be delivered to his Cypriot ex-wife. The Egyptian aviation industry had been reeling from the crash of a Russian passenger jet last year over the country's Sinai Peninsula. Metrojet Flight 9268 broke into pieces shortly after reaching its cruising altitude on October 31st. All 224 people on board, mostly Russian tourists, were killed. The flight was headed to St. Petersburg from the resort city of Sharm el-Sheikh. Russian forensic experts had taken swabs from debris at the crash site. Authorities in Moscow said the plane had been brought down by a terrorist act. The head of the country's Federal Security Service said that explosives were detected, explaining why plane fragments had been scattered over a wide area. And in 2004, a plane chartered by Egypt's Flash Airlines crashed into the Red Sea. All 148 people on board Flight 604 were killed, mostly French tourists on the way home from a holiday in Sharm. Concerns over the plane's condition emerged shortly afterwards. The 11-year-old Boeing had failed safety checks in Switzerland, and the airline had been banned from flying over the country. For more than a decade, until the downing of the Metrojet plane, it was Egypt's worst aviation disaster.
Now, I'm trying to remember, there was the guy that purposefully crashed the airplane in, it seems like it was down in near South America in the ocean, that they figured out that he had done it on purpose. And I was thinking that guy was an Egyptian. But anyway, terrorism. And it means that there's an infiltration. There were three air marshals on that flight. And so it means that the security has been compromised somehow. It's going to take them a while to find that out, of course. But it seems like it was an explosion, so they smuggled a bomb on somehow or found another way. But, you know, you got three air marshals to fight people, so you assume that they didn't take over the cockpit, so there had to be an explosion. So anyway, 6:20, we'll come back and talk about Orgy Island and Bill Clinton, Jeff Epstein, and how this might affect Hillary Clinton. 6:20 on the button, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 to call in. And yes, I do have the text machine, 805-6180, 805-6180. Get your, at least your text on the record. But why not call in? And don't forget, we're live on Blog Talk Radio right now. Blog Talk Radio, Kelly O'Connell. And you can also get a copy of the show later. We'll be right back. All right, it's the 20th of May. Man, this year is flying by. Isn't this year just kind of cooking along? It says 73 degrees outside, it says. So I guess it's going to be a little bit warmer today, huh? And we've got this story that is, it is a big deal. Now, how, you know, stories are covered depends on which party you're in or which movement you're in. Of course, everybody knows that. But the upshot is that you got a big deal here. Now, here's the thing. It was different when Bill Clinton was in office. There were some different rules. And when Hillary ran the first time, I think she had more sympathy. And now she doesn't have as much sympathy, in part because I think that Bernie Sanders is stealing her cool. And in doing that, in taking this moment, this from Hillary is just now seen as being this person who represents the old wing of the party. I mean, it's obvious, right? That, you know, she was married to a president, and she tries to put herself across as a person who's very current, and very, very much, cutting edge and everything. But I think the upshot is that you're not going to, you're really not going to get that back again. It's been lost. All right. Now here's a little introduction to, well, there's a couple of here. I've got a number of clips here. I'm only going to be able to play a few, but I am absolutely fascinated by how this thing is being exposed. So the airplanes that flew out to this place were, the little St. James Island were called the Lolita Express. Lolita is the famous book by Nabokov that describes how the young girl, the 12-year-old girl, whatever, seduces this professor, whatever age she was. All right, here is just an introduction into the Jeff Epstein. This is a big deal because what it does is it underscores the narrative, number one, that Bill Clinton's a pervert, number two, that he does risky, illegal, and even immoral things, and number three, that somehow Hillary has been involved in covering him up, although she said yesterday she's not going to defend him. Check this out.
Whatever is in that article, does anything in that article come to even close to meeting with Bill Ayers, a terrorist who tried to kill Americans?
No, it doesn't, dear.
Sorry. I lost my mind. But it's crazy.
Does anything in that article come even close to what Bill Clinton did? I mean, now we know about this Lolita flight, right? And then Fox News, a piece that was out a couple of days ago, said that Bill Clinton was on this flight. Jeffrey Epstein is a known pedophile, right? He's been, it's been proven. He would fly people around the country. There would be a bed on these airplanes, and there would be group sex going on.
Mile High Club.
Now, Bill Clinton took 26 flights on this airplane, sometimes ditching his Secret Service to go on this flight. Now, if New York Times is going to do what they're going to do, but the Clintons want to use this war on women thing with Donald Trump, they better be careful because there is so much material that Donald Trump can use against Bill Clinton, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. I think you're going to hear a lot more about these flights too, by the way.
Interesting. All right. So
you are definitely going to hear more about these flights even right now. Bill Clinton relationship with Jeffrey Epstein right here.
Well,
it doesn't sound like good audio. All right, let's dig in right here to. All right, so this is called. All right, so there's some of these are a year, maybe a year old, but here is. All right, this is about a year, a little bit of a year and a half old or whatever. What did Bill Clinton know? Former president named an Epstein sex slavery lawsuit. So this is actually rises to the level of human trafficking. This guy, Jeff Epstein, flew two girls from France, two 12-year-old girls, in as a gift for somebody else, some other guy to have sex with. So basically, you've got this island where this billionaire is flying in these girls and world-class celebrities. Bill Clinton flies in, Alan Dershowitz, the guy that was the most prominent astrophysicist, the guy in the wheelchair, the automatic wheelchair is flown in. All kinds of different people, Prince Andrew, Woody Allen, all kinds of different people are flown into this place. And there's a lot, there is some weird combination of science conventions. Because this guy gave $50 million to Harvard, and so they set up a thing in his honor. Science conventions and teenage pedophilia. Check it out.
It began with a story of sex slaves, underage girls, a billionaire, murder, a prince, and at least one former U.S. president. What has been the biggest scandal in the U.K. since World War II has now come to the U.S., and it may involve former President Bill Clinton. The story surrounds this man, billionaire Jeffrey Epstein, who served time in 2008 for soliciting prostitution. That charge came as part of a plea deal. It all began in 2005 when Epstein was investigated after a woman reported that he paid her 14-year-old daughter $300 for sex. And since that initial claim, there have been more than 40 women who have come forward with claims that Epstein is a sexual predator and that he not only abused them, but shared them with famous and powerful friends. Well, flash forward to today, and a lawsuit is underway in Palm Beach, Florida. In that lawsuit, multiple mentions of former President Bill Clinton, who reportedly took multiple trips to Epstein's private island. You see it here. It's called Little St. James. It all happened between 2002 and 2005. Now, according to testimony in the lawsuit, at least one woman on that compound was there unwillingly. She is referred to as Jane Doe 102. She was forced to live as one of Epstein's underage sex slaves for years and was forced to have sex with politicians, businessmen, royalty, people working in academics, etc. Now, to be clear, in 2008, when the plea deal happened, Clinton cut off ties to Epstein, but maybe not. According to the UK Daily Mail, the lawsuit claims that Clinton was friends with an unnamed woman who kept images of naked underage children on her computer.
Take a little break here and come back and hear more about this. But this is the guy. All right. So Hillary Clinton says, I don't have to defend anything that Bill has done. Interesting claim, right? Now, if Bill was off running a coffee plantation in Brazil or something, banana plantation, then it wouldn't be that big of a deal. Maybe. I mean, if she helped him cover it up, it would be a big deal to me. But he is, you know, here's the thing. We have a sex cult in America. And the media favors leftism, liberalism. You put those two things together. Things are dismissed because they're of a sexual nature. Well, that's private. You know, don't worry about that. But what about when it's a public figure putting pressure on a private individual to have sex with them and sexually harassing them, assaulting them? Or in some claims that there's been a rape, and then that's covered up because of leftism in the media, because this person's a liberal, but at the same time, there are victims. So a lot of these victims that have been left in the wake of, Bill Clinton are actually Democrats, because they're people that had access to Clinton through his campaigns, through working for him or whatever. So it's very strange. Now, on top of that, you inject a billionaire pedophile, Jeffrey Epstein, that he and Bill Clinton apparently really hit it off. And Bill Clinton was with him at least, they said, 27 times. It's probably more than that. And Bill Clinton was on this island with other famous people. And so did Bill Clinton have relations with anybody other than his wife on this island? And was it an underage person? I mean, I'm sure we'll never know, but does anybody think that Bill Clinton would be opposed to that idea? 633 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 to call in, and 805-6180 to text. We'll be right back. Feel free to call in and speculate. All right, Sex Island, the bizarre case of Jeffrey Epstein. So weird. It, you know, what's weird is that, you know, these people that the left, that the media loves, they could do anything they wanted. And the media doesn't even ask the question, let alone do any investigative reporting. So here we go. A little more on the Bill Clinton sex island, the lawsuit against Jeff Epstein and Bill Clinton being named in the lawsuit.
Helped to recruit underage children for Epstein and photographed underage females in sexually explicit poses. Now, while Clinton cut off ties with Epstein, this woman's abuses apparently did not end their relationship, as she was reportedly one of the 400 guests at Chelsea Clinton's 2010 wedding. So what did Bill Clinton know? What was he a part of? According to The Smoking Gun, as part of a civil suit filed against Epstein by several of his victims, lawyers for the women floated the possibility of subpoenaing Clinton, since he might well be a source of relevant information about Epstein's activities. Now, while Clinton was never deposed, lawyers obtained Epstein's computerized phone directory, which included email addresses for Clinton, along with 21 phone numbers for him, including those for his assistant, Doug Band, according to a court filing. Now, I spoke earlier with Dennis Hoff, the owner of the Bunny Ranch in Nevada, and a man who personally knows Bill Clinton. In fact, Hoff photographed Clinton with two of his Bunny Ranch girls at a charity event in Los Angeles in March of last year. I asked Hoff if, with multiple trips to Little St. John Island, if there is any way that Bill Clinton was not aware of these underage girls.
I don't believe it's possible. It's amazing that this happened and came to light. And I don't think Bill Clinton would ever want to be involved with an underage girl. But the fact that it's happening in front of his eyes and that the Secret Service guys didn't do something about it is shocking.
21 phone numbers, as well as email addresses that were reportedly belonged to him that were in possession of Jeffrey Epstein. What does that say to you?
Well, it says that this Epstein is just an absolute disgusting pig. I mean, to be messing around with underage girls, it's just unbelievable. Now, I give Bill Clinton a little bit of a pass because, look, he had other parties after this all happened, and who went to it? Stephanopoulos, Katie Couric, Woody Allen, which is not a good sign, I guess, and Chelsea Handler. So it could be possible that Clinton did not know about this, but it's almost hard to believe.
And that party that Hoff mentions there was just one party as compared to the multiple visits by Bill Clinton. But this story is much bigger than just former President Clinton. Prince Andrew, the Duke of York, is being connected to this scandal as well. In 2001, Virginia Roberts, a 17-year-old who now claims to have been held as Epstein's sex slave, was introduced to Prince Andrew while staying at a London home. Ms. Roberts claims that she was paid £10,000 as a reward for having sex with Prince Andrew.
All right, so these are the people that Bill Clinton hangs around with. Bill Clinton would have known that this guy was up to this type of thing. He was famous for bringing these underage girls around. So and here's something really weird. Alan Dershowitz, who was, I believe, the youngest professor in the history of Harvard Law and has written a number of books, one of the top lawyers in America, said that he doesn't release any book without letting Jeff Epstein read it first. And Jeff Epstein is not even a lawyer. Very weird. All right, we'll take a little break here, get you some weather, and be right back. 641, Kelly O'Connor Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450, 805-6180.
6:44. It's 6:44 on AM 1450, and we've still got some pretty serious flooding and bad weather out in Texas and into Louisiana, et cetera. All right, so here is... hold on just a second. I got two reports for you here.
Unfortunately, we're looking at cool and cloudy days ahead from the mid-Atlantic all the way up to the northeast. Two areas of low pressure are going to cater to this kind of miserable weather. One coming up from the south, that's going to bring the moisture, and we have an upper level low, and that's just going to continue to feed in the cold air as this low lingers. So we're talking really through the weekend into the first part of the week, the rain is going to stick around along with these cool temperatures. Check out Saturday's highs. DC, look how cold. 58 degrees is your high. Now, this would be a record low high. It will warm up, but the rain sticks around. For the rest of the Mid-Atlantic and the Northeast, temperatures will start to rebound as we head into the first of the week. But check this out. The rain goes nowhere, so it will be cloudy and damp right through the first of next week.
All right, so there's rain up through the upper eastern seaboard. Here is, though, a little bit on severe weather Friday in the south.
Parts of Florida have had a decent amount of rain this week, and there's no escaping it just yet. We still have more rain in the forecast for today. Scattered showers and thunderstorms on tap for your Friday, and this will be from the Gulf all the way through to the southeast. So here's this front as it pushes east and takes the scattered showers and thunderstorms along with it. Now, the severe potential for this is not too great, but certainly we could see some gusty winds and some strong hail.
All right, so let's get back to this story, the bizarre case of the Jeffrey Epstein sex scandal. I bring this up And just to let you know, there's motorcycles in town, the run to the wall. And so be on your guard for that. And if you talk to motorcyclists, you'll find out that the number one danger for driving a motorcycle is cars, because a lot of times cars don't see motorcycles. But they're going to be puttering around town all day. All right. That sounds a little dismissive. But anyway, you know what I'm saying? The reason I'm bringing this up is this is at the heart of the response to the idea that Trump is a sexist. He treats women like garbage. And then you bring in Bill Clinton and his connection to a known pedophile, a level 3 sex offender, the highest level, a guy that has done so much more than they convicted of him of. But there was a plea deal, and that the story goes, when he went into jail for 18 months, they allowed him to run his science undertaking in Florida. They gave him, it was like a Pablo Escobar. I mean, this guy could do anything he wanted in prison. Now he's out, and he somehow gets all of these international people involved in this. But here's a little bit more on the Jeff Epstein case. And both of these stories were from about a year, a little bit more than a year ago. So it's pretty fresh news.
The Liar's Ball, past contributor to Vanity Fair, where she wrote about Jeffrey Epstein. Her latest piece about him was just posted in the Daily Beast. You should definitely give that a look. Great to have you here.
Thanks, Chris.
Okay, so you're writing for Vanity Fair. You got this assignment. That was 2002, I think?
2002.
Right. Why did people want to profile Jeffrey Epstein? Why did Graydon Carter ask you to profile Jeffrey Epstein about in 2002?
So Jeffrey Epstein lived in this enormous house on the Upper East Side of New York, and he was gossiped about, but he actually had a very low social profile. But people did talk about these kind of amazing parties that he had with these academics, with all these billionaires and these girls. But no one knew how he funded this extraordinary lifestyle with the plane. And then suddenly he popped up above the radar. He flew Bill Clinton to Africa, as you said, on that plane. It was reported in the sort of society gossip columns. And I think Graydon Carter, my boss, actually was trying to do me a favor at the time. I was pregnant with twins, couldn't fly wasn't really allowed to fly. And he said, okay, here's a story that's sort of on your doorstep. Should be nice and easy. This mysterious Gatsby-type figure. No one knows how he really made his money. Why do all these people hang out with him?
So he's got all these famous friends.
Yeah.
No one knows how he made his money, but people seem enamored of him.
Right.
He's throwing these parties, and there's also this talk about girls. I mean, you got Donald Trump even saying on the record, like, he likes girls, he likes them young, kind of like half-jokingly.
Yeah, no, and when I interviewed, they all came out for Jeffrey. I mean, he didn't want to be seen controlling the piece, but he tried to control the piece. He was on the phone all the time. I would be called out of the blue by Jimmy Kane, then running Bear Stearns. I was called up by Ace Greenberg. I was called by Leslie Wexner. Marshall Rose asked me to come and meet him in his office.
All right, so that's a little bit boring, but the upshot on this thing is that and the claims are extraordinary if you get into it, and there's a lady by the name of Conchita who's written a book on this, and the book detailed how there is a high level pedophile ring that is entrenched in at the highest levels of government. Let's take a break here. I'll play a little bit of that. I think I've got some from Alex Jones, but be right back. 805-6180 to text 523-1450 to call AM Las Cruces 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell. We'll be right back. All right, so how does this thing play out for Hillary? I think that here's the problem is that Hillary Hillary is running as every woman, as Jane Doe, busting her butt her whole life. Her husband is a pig. She keeps her nose to the grindstone. He gets into office. She serves him, and now it's time for turnabout. The problem with that narrative is it's getting challenged by this. And this is the narrative. This is the next story that I think could force out this long-suffering feminist ideal of Hillary, is that what if that story gets forced out by the idea that Bill is a sex predator, which many people have already accepted, and Hillary is not a long-suffering spouse. She's actually gay, and she is got her own agenda, and she's got a girlfriend whom Abedin or whatever. And Bill Clinton is this predator, and that Hillary Clinton made this. I'm just saying, kind of, this is the worst case scenario of all the parts that's laying out there. I'm not saying it's true, and I'm not saying that I believe this. I don't know what Hillary's orientation is, but you could play this out. You could play it out in such a way that all these parts come together. And that's, I think, what Trump is doing. I don't know if he's going to say anything about her being gay, but that particular idea has been out there for so long, and she has so many masculine traits. And here's the thing, Bill Clinton, let's say the story comes out that they made an agreement a long time ago. You helped me, I helped you. I'm basically gay. You're serial womanizer, you know, whatever, creep. And so what if it comes out from this Epstein stuff that Bill's kind of a monster and that Hillary has been using him as she used, if they used each other to, for power, and that she knew her whole life that he was going to be this kind of a person, that he was this kind of a person. And so she just used him. And now she's going to use him as her economic advisor. Doesn't she, doesn't somebody have to, if he comes back into office, doesn't somebody have to explain who he is to a new generation? And doesn't Hillary have to defend how she's acted in the past if it's harmed women? Here's a little bit more from Sean Hannity. I'm just saying that is a absolutely spectacularly destructive narrative that could come in and is starting to come into this race.
Welcome back to Hannity. New concerns tonight for the Clinton camp as the former president's bizarre friendship with convicted pedophile Jeffrey Epstein has been called into question once more in a New York Post article entitled Bill's Libido Threatens to Derail Hillary Again. Now, just last week, political consultant Roger Stone detailed the extent of Clinton's woes and their potential entanglement in a brand new lawsuit when he wrote, quote, Epstein even pleaded the Fifth Amendment when asked about his relationship with Clinton and whether Clinton was supplied with underage girls. Now, this new lawsuit may compel the former president to testify under oath about what he was doing there, meaning at Orgy Island. Here now his reaction is the man who wrote that article, longtime Republican strategist, New York Times bestselling author Roger Stone, and the Washington Examiner's Rebecca Berger is back with us. Guys, good to see you. You highlighted that this is far from over, which was my instinct from the beginning. Why is he hanging out with a convicted pedophile? And it goes deeper in terms of other relationships. And you're saying that this case, because he got a slap on the wrist, meaning Epstein, there's a lot more to come here. Explain, Roger.
Well, because there is now a credible lawsuit to overturn the non-prosecution agreement in which Epstein, the pedophile, got a slap on the wrist, that the adult women who were procuring underage girls for him got immunity, and the VIPs, some very big names that he was trafficking underage children to for sexual purposes, got immunity. So if this is overturned, Bill Clinton, among others, could be compelled to answer under oath what he was doing on Epstein's plane 17 times, what he was doing on Epstein's hedonistic private island multiple times in the company, not of Hillary Clinton, but of a number of underage girls. I think Bill Clinton's got a lot of answering to do, and I think the courts may compel him to answer those questions.
Why did
All right, so running out of time in this hour, but you see the narrative springing up here, and I mean, the fact of the matter is, Hillary Clinton doesn't get any coverage from the "Oh, poor Hillary" group. You know, she suffered so much. Now he's embarrassing her again on Orgy Island, because at some point people begin to question, what is her judgment? Why was she with Bill Clinton her whole life? It becomes to look more and more like just a kind of a tawdry exchange for power, and it brings Hillary's personal life into play. If she was not intimate with Bill Clinton all those years, how did she meet her own needs? It's a terrible narrative for Hillary, and I think ultimately it's blown up in her face, this stupid article from the New York Times that was disproved. And I think it's down from here. I don't think Hillary, I think this is a disastrous narrative. 659 Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. And 523-1450 to call in, and 805-6180 to text. We'll be back after a break on the hour. Got a lot of good stories for you.
Okay, so here is some of your stories. Lake Mead in Vegas, where I grew up, the lowest in history. You would have thought that a lot of the rain coming across the Sierra Nevadas would have refilled that, but not. And I mean, it's amazing. It's, you've got this bathtub ring around Lake Mead that is like 100 feet high. It's pretty sad. China denies shipping marinated human flesh in cans to be sold as food. So where would they get that flesh from? So what kind of people end up in prison in China? It's Christians, amongst other people. McDonald's workers brawling over apple pies. Egypt Air passengers spun to their death from 37,000 feet. Scientists claiming that HIV cure is right around the corner, that the virus's DNA has been deleted. Hillary is furious with Colonel Sanders, General Sanders, Private Sanders, for going after her. She's on the verge of not being able to take it anymore. Maybe she'll have a nervous breakdown. Glenn Beck calling Facebook the system of his lifetime. I don't know if that is a one of his prophetic utterances or if it's just his own opinion. You know, could you imagine St. Paul, you know, doing an interview, trying to figure out, is this from God? Is this from you? That's the same problem that Glenn Beck has, probably. Businesses in Milwaukee demanding English only and getting, of course, attacked like crazy. Family forced out of home by thousands of mysterious bugs resistant to exterminator. And, well, that's those could be those little teeny tiny, you know, what do they call them? Spy drones. And, all right, so... Oh, and for some of you spendthrifts out there, a new wristband will shock you if you spend too much. And 80% of illegals are immediately released. On the border, it is a trail of death. We'll get into that next week. But all right, so I've got a little bit more on this subject here. We've got an interview with the lady that claims that she was raped by Bill Clinton. If I can get this puppy to play, and I pray that I do. Here we
right
go.
Now on this special podcast edition of Aaron Klein Investigative Radio is Juanita Broderick. Juanita Broderick, welcome back to Aaron Klein Investigative Radio.
Thank you, Aaron.
Well, thank you for coming on. So, okay, in recent days, the New York Times puts out this investigation, they say, into the women and Donald Trump. It's called Crossing the Line. This is the title of the article. Crossing the Line, How Donald Trump Behaved with Women in Private. Now, Juanita, in this article, they say, the New York Times says that they spent 6 weeks to interview 50 different women, and they put together a profile. And, of course, one of the women right now who was the main one that was being quoted is now saying that her words were taken out of context, and she's very upset. But here they say they put together interviews that reveal, quote, unwelcome advances, a shrewd reliance on ambition, and unsettling workplace conduct over decades. So I think it's very interesting that the New York Times, I mean, that's a lot of energy, 50 interviews over 6 weeks. Has the New York Times similarly investigated the accusations against Bill Clinton? And actually, have they contacted you? Have you, Juanita Broderick, been contacted? Because I see the accusations here against Trump. Unwelcome advances, a shrewd reliance on ambition. What about the accusation of rape? That's pretty serious. Did they investigate that? Did they, Juanita, the New York Times, contact you to investigate your accusations against Bill Clinton?
No, they haven't, Aaron. And I've not read the entire article about Mr. Trump, but I've been listening to the news and all of the fallout in connection with it. And I wish that they would use the same amount of energy to interview the hundreds of women that Bill Clinton has probably spoken bad words about, and the many women that he has assaulted. I think a person's own actions and what they do to women speaks much louder than a person's hearsay and words.
Now, aside from the New York Times, what about, Juanita, the media in general? Do you think that they ought to also investigate these accusations not only against Bill, but also against Hillary? You have said, actually, on this radio show that Hillary tried to silence you. Do you believe that the media ought to investigate that?
Oh, yes. Not only my story, but so many others. You know, I think they could. I think that there's so many people that haven't heard about what Bill Clinton did to the women back in that time that they need to know. Just like on Twitter, I have these young millennials coming on saying, is this really true? Did this happen? Well, yes, it did happen to me.
Now, lastly, about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, Donald Trump stepped up the rhetoric against Hillary Clinton. He's now accusing her of being, quote, a nasty, mean enabler who he says destroyed, and that's quoting him here, destroyed the lives of her husband's mistresses and alleged sexual assault victims. What say you, Juanita Roderick, about that? Do you agree? Do you see Hillary, as Donald Trump does, as an enabler of Bill's activities?
Well, I still feel that way. I feel like she has been the enabler behind him in allowing him to continue on the same path that he did back in the 70s and 80s and 90s. He has absolutely no morals when it comes to women.
The morals of the barnyard. But it sounds like, I mean, some of the stuff that Clinton is been charged with over the years, accused of, it's like he had a sex drive that was just totally implacable. It was utterly, it could not be sated. He suffered from satyriasis, I think is the technical term. Anyway, we'll take a break here and come back. I got some other stories for you. 713 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 to call in. And 805-618. We'll shift out of this Bill the Sex Predator story. Okay, so we've got a couple of different stories. One of which is the issue is whether the Iranian deal, number one, is going to fall apart. But they already got their money back, I think. And the second one is that Ben Rhodes admitted this advisor to it. Obama admitted to lying. To get the Obama, I mean, this is the story of Obama. Obama doesn't have the experience really that he needed to get the job done, and he just uses very simple. He uses this kind of like messianic, I know more than you. I'm here on a mission attitude, and and somewhere in his childhood he developed this ability to act like he knew everything and was super competent, and I think that has really fooled a lot of people when he doesn't really, a lot of times he's just got these primitive leftist ideals and he's just going out and working on them every day. Here's a little bit from on the embarrassment of Ben Rhodes.
Get more on this Iran story from syndicated columnist Charles Krauthammer, who joins me tonight from Washington. Charles, your thoughts on this story and all the different facets of it, including the executive privilege.
Well, when you listen to Josh Argus, that was.
Let me adjust the sound here because it's pinging on the board. But hold on just a second here. See if I can get this back to an acceptable level here. Let's check this out.
Tonight from Washington. Charles, your thoughts on this story and all the different facets of it, including the executive privilege.
Well, when you listen to Josh Argus, that was a an exercise in linguistic acrobatics to say something very simple. If there's a subpoena, you call it executive privilege. If there isn't a subpoena, you call it something else. Either way, it's exactly the same idea. And I do think the administration is right. If this were a Republican administration, you would not want the Congress compelling an advisor to give the advice in public. That's well known. That's well practiced, which is why I think the entire exercise was a bit of a misfire on the part of the Republicans. It was obvious they were not going to allow him to testify. Roach had completely embarrassed himself, completely exposed the administration for its deception and misleading and the use of pliant people in the press to echo their misstatements. That was already out there. It was in a big article. It was known. There was no way you were going to get live testimony. I don't think they should have attempted this because, as you just demonstrated in the Roden piece, it was turned by Democrats into a retrial, revisiting of the Iraq war, which is not to the GOP's advantage.
All right. So you've got a situation in Iran where they had this deal that was put together and it had to go through. And the fact of the matter is that the president went to the mat for it. And it described at the time outside of the media as one of the worst deals America ever has tried to enter into. And that, you know, that you're dealing with a rogue nation, you're dealing with a terror state. You've got a situation where there's a country that has been fomenting terrorism in the name of religion against Israel and against the West for decades. And you've got, it's just absolutely crazy that you've got this a deal that's been put together and this country that's a terrorist sponsor gets hundreds of billions of dollars back, and now trade with Iran is being naturalized. And here's the question from the Washington Post is, let me play a clip for you real quick here from Senator Johnny Isaacson. Is the deal with Iran already unraveling?
Against the nuclear deal with Iran for a ton of reasons.
Senator Johnny Isaacson fought President Obama's reckless deal with the Iranian regime. Now Iran is already violating the agreement, illegally testing ballistic missiles, threatening Israel, and supporting terrorism in the Middle East.
The United States got nothing in return. It's a terrible deal with disastrous results.
Working to protect our national security. That's concerning.
All right, so here's the issue. Is the deal, has it fallen apart? So there are people out there that saying this deal cannot stand, but I mean, what did America get in return? Iran gets hundreds of billions of dollars. It gets the right to trade for weapons across the world. And what America gets in return is this idea that it's bringing Iran back out of the wilderness, and it is going to get them to play ball. And this is one of the things that this is one of the things that Obama ran on, that Obama was so much better than Bush in terms of dealing with foreigners. And he understood Islam, and he didn't try to force things down people's throats. And what's turned out is that Obama doesn't seem to, really understand deal making. And, you know, you don't come to the table and say, we're going to give you all these things right here. This is what we're prepared to give you. And then the other side says, oh, my God, you're so generous here. What do you want? It's the total opposite. You got to keep your cards on your chest. And, you know, if you tell somebody, for example, don't do this, or we're going to have a response. And by the way, we've already ruled out using the military. That tells that other country that they don't need to worry. And that's the type of thing that he has done time and again. So there is an article in Newsweek magazine, 5/18/16, that came out 2 days ago. The title of it is Why the Iranian Nuclear Deal is at Risk of Unraveling. And so the biggest source of friction is a U.S. law that bars Iran from using the U.S. financial system and the American dollar, even indirectly. And for those of you who don't know, oil is traded in dollars across the world. So if the Iranians can't use dollars, then it really crimps their ability to be able to work in the oil trade, and that's what they wanted to do. So anyway, there is a lot of evidence that they're testing weaponry, they're buying weaponry. They keep threatening, in their response to this deal that they made with Obama, they insulted the Americans, then they took hostages when these guys were, Navy people were in these boats near their territory. They took them in, and one of the commanders of that squadron was just fired. So that was a total disaster. And now every single time Iran opens its mouth, it's insulting America. It's making fun of Obama. And it's just, I don't know. It's just like, what did we gain from that? Why did we have to have that deal? I think that Obama needed to put on the record this deal-making ability that he bragged about when he first got into office. At 7:26, take a break here. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 to call in, and 805-6180 to text. We'll be right back. All right, so Oklahoma has passed a law. The legislature, anyway, has passed a law that would create a felony for getting an abortion. Here's a little bit on that from the Washington Post. And the bill says a person who performs an abortion can be punished with between 1 and 3 years in prison, which is a felony level. And a doctor who did this would lose their medical license, and unless it was a reason to save the baby. Here's a little bit from one of the legislators.
So I will fight absolutely for the right of every single unborn child, because I firmly believe that life begins at conception.
Life begins at conception. So anyway, it's the, here's the thing, and I'll say this again, I've said it before, but the battle between the left and the right that is played out in the Supreme Court is the result of the fact that while the left is more active politically, I don't think that you want to say that they have stronger beliefs, but they are more willing to go to court to get their beliefs put into law. And then there is natural resistance on the right to people who don't want the legal system used to force things that they would claim would be immoral or against their religion. So gay marriage is an example. Abortion is another example. So instead of dealing with these problems in the country, these issues, you take to the Supreme Court, you fight them out, it's established there, and then the Supreme Court says, well, we've evolved or whatever their theory is, and then the right has to just choke on it. And this type of thing is becoming more and more common, and is why people feel as if, I think, at some point, there's going to be some sort of a civil unrest. But I mean, I think more realistically speaking, what the right needs to do is to fight to get back and get more influence in the court system and the legislature. And when the left does this stuff, and there are 2 to 1 more people in this country who claim to be conservative, yet it is the left that constantly is bringing up these arguments, and they're making various arguments to support their ideas more, sometimes more persuasively than at others. But minority rights. Now, I'm not talking about racial minority. I'm talking about minority rights within the context of just because this small group of people is tiny in comparison to the majority doesn't mean that their rights shouldn't be protected. But how they're protected is then they take them into the legislature or into the court system, and they're forced on everybody else. And it is something that has become repetitive. So there is a large sense of dis-ease, of dissatisfaction with the court system. Many people in the country feel cut off from their religion, that they can't practice it anymore. And to see a Christian baker be forced to make a cake for a gay marriage, and if they don't do it, they pay $100,000 in fines, $150,000 in fines. People can't believe that this is the same country where the Puritans and the Pilgrims showed up and said, we want freedom of religion. It's become a tyranny of liberalism of the minority. But future generations are not going to know the story. They're just going to be liberalized by the activities of the courts and stuff. So the fight in the country is over. It's a culture war, and it's being played out in part in the court system. So it's very frustrating for some people. All right, let's take a break here and come back. And I've got a few more juicy stories for you. Kelly O'Connell, 735 AM, Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. 523-1450 to call in, and 805-6180 to text. And open topic if you want to talk about anything else. I had mentioned earlier the sex cult that has engulfed America and really the West. And so as an expression of this, and, you know, it used to be male and female married until death do us part. And it was, sex was a part of the relationship, but by no means was sex the relationship. And they've just done a study and found out that, I mean, you think about the amount of time that people obsess about sex and finding the right partner and all this business and all the stuff used to sell advertising, that people spend a tiny minority, like half of 1% of their time in sex, or 17 days out of their life. So, I mean, it's just kind of amazing how dominant it is in people's thinking. The sex cult on a personal level is expressed in the viewing of pornography and these type of things, a permissive society in which we have accepted a serial monogamy. People are not, I think 2-3% of people are virgins when they marry today. So there's almost no expectation even in the church for people to keep their chastity. And we're totally inundated under this. And then you've got, the idea in, you know, serial monogamy, you stay with one person, sleep with them, and then you meet another person. Well, now you've got applications like Tinder, which are sex applications. You're looking for somebody, you see their picture, you get together with them, have your experience and move on. But now there's an increasing movement in America for polyamory or open marriages. And in some, it's because there's a certain sexless aspect of the relationship. And a certain percentage of women will lose their libido. They will lose their sex drive by the time they say they reach 40 or 50. They say it's a naturally occurring phenomenon. And so perhaps you could look at it either from a religious or an evolutionary viewpoint, that sex is oriented towards the creation of children. But now we've got contracts. People coming into marriages and they're signing contracts or agreeing to contracts that there's an open relationship. The marriage will continue, but it's okay for, in this is an article from the Daily Telegraph or the Telegraph UK, for husbands to cheat for whatever reason. Now, in America, in the Hamptons, in New York, we have sex clubs, and there are sex clubs that are popping up across the globe, or pardon me, across the United States. There, I think there's one in Vegas, but sex has become, to an increasing extent, an activity, a hobby, as opposed to a relationship, and so it's losing its religious moorings. And so one of the questions you would want to ask is, what are men and women naturally like as sexual animals if they don't have any training, if they're not trained by society in any particular way, if they don't have an orientation towards a particular type of behavior when they are from the church or whatever. So if and the reason that sex is valued in marriage, or pardon me, in religion, is, you know, the doctrine in the Bible is the two become one. So two people come together. That's obviously very highly beneficial in the setting of a family. A child knows where it came from. The two parents live together. It's trained. It's brought up. So we've left that behind, though, as mentioned before. That idea is way, way in the past. And so what is going to take the place of it is already kind of, if you did studies of people who had bought into this idea, the idea that, you know, there's no connection between sex and morality or sex and marriage or whatever. If you studied their lives, this is based on the number of people that I've known, and, you know, I've been around Christian settings and I've been around highly secular, you know, I've had a lot of friends in both groups. I have never known anybody who was, you know, a sex fanatic that was happy, because it seems to unleash, you know, demons in people's lives that are insatiable. I guess that's the very, very definition of insatiable is a person who has a libido that just cannot be satisfied. And I think Bill Clinton is a guy that has this element in his life. Now, I have got I've got some computer problems right now, but I've got to switch gears here for you. I've got something on George Clooney that I thought that you might find entertaining. So here is George Clooney is a total blank, but he's this actor has advocated for, he's advocated for Obama. You know what's funny to me? And George Clooney is the first cousin of one of my best friends, Carlos, who's been on the show a number of times, and so I know a certain amount about him just through stories that my friend tells me. He doesn't go out of his way to talk about him, but I might occasionally ask him a question if I see something in the news. Clooney is more, it would be better to rename him George Clueless. But anyway, here's a little bit from Alex Jones reporter on Clooney being a total blank.
There's not going to be a President Donald Trump. That's not going to happen. It's not going to happen because we're not going to be used. Fear is not going to be something that what drives our country. We're not going to be scared of Muslims or immigrants or, you know, women.
The worst thing about George Clooney isn't the unremitting bull that streams out of his mouth. It's the way he always acts as if he's got the moral high ground. You don't have the moral high ground. You're supporting one of the most corrupt politicians in generations. You're supporting a woman who took $100 million from Gulf State dictators, countries responsible for some of the worst human rights abuses on the planet. You're supporting a woman who's in bed with Saudi Arabia, a country that bankrolled ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and was involved in 9/11.
Trump is actually a result in many ways of the fact that much of the news programs didn't follow up and ask tough questions. That's the truth.
Really? So if Trump wasn't asked hard questions, why do studies show that he got the most negative coverage out of any Republican candidate?
You know, the ratings go up because they can show up empty podium saying Donald Trump is about to speak, yeah. You know, as opposed to taking those 30 seconds and saying, well, let's talk about refugees, which is the biggest crisis that's going on in the world right now.
Okay, George, let's talk about the refugees, because it makes complete sense that you would throw your support behind Saudi Arabia's preferred candidate. You see, Clooney and the Saudis have a lot in common when it comes to refugees. They both whine and bitch about refugees all day long, while taking in precisely zero refugees. Saudi Arabia has 100,000 air-conditioned tents with bathroom and kitchen facilities that can house 3 million people sitting empty for most of the year. How many Syrian refugees have the Saudis taken in? None. George Clooney visits Angela Merkel to lecture Europe about how they're not doing enough for Muslim migrants, despite accepting millions of them over the past year. How many Syrian refugees has George Clooney taken in? None. Zero, nada, zilch. The guy's got 5 frigging mansions, 3 of which are in Europe. He's just bought another one in Britain for £10 million. Clooney and his wife have got room for a new swimming pool, a home cinema, a library, a steam room, a spa, a gym, a wine cellar, and 8 empty bedrooms. But no room for any refugees. So Clooney, when are you going to do your bit for the refugees you care so deeply about? Or is this just one long, tiresome exercise in virtue signaling? I wonder. How dare you lecture Germans about accepting more refugees from the comfort of your $100 million Lake Como villa, while people in villages like Sumte, with a population of little over 100, are inundated by 750 unassimilated Muslim migrants?
We've lost the ability to get to and tell the truth and get to the facts.
Seriously. This is a guy who throws $350,000 a plate fundraisers for Hillary and then has the nerve to get on TV the next day to complain about getting big money out of politics. This is a guy who lectures Hollywood about diversity, yet whose new movie doesn't feature one single black actor. He's a total hypocrite, and I'm sick of seeing his smug, self-satisfied face spewing out meaningless platitudes while the media makes out like he's Jesus f***ing Christ.
All right, so, yeah, there was this fascinating interaction between Steve Wynn, who's kind of a hero in Vegas for all the work that he's done there, all the jobs that he's created. And there was a shouting match that occurred apparently over tequila, and Steve Wynn made a comment about Obama that George Clooney didn't appreciate, and George Clooney says he's my friend, you know. So I don't know how many people in America could really say that the president was their friend, but apparently George Clooney can. And there was a shouting match. There's a great quote from him. Let's take a little break here. Kelly O'Connell, 749 AM, Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450, and 805-6180 to text. We'll be right back at 749. Is 7:52, and I had one more little clip here for you, but you won't be surprised for me to tell you that it stuck. But the clip was this, about this fight between Steve Wynn, and they're at his hotel, and Steve Wynn is a billionaire, and George Clooney is this, you know, this guy that makes movies, and he's fighting for his buddy Obama, but it's in the context of the fact that they've been drinking. And I think that, I think George Clooney has had a few more drinks than Steve Wynn. So he had a kind of a takedown of him that I found remarkable, but anyway, so, all right. So this week, we have had a fight between, Trump and Hillary, in which this, story came out in the New York Times, and it was immediately shot down by Trump, the ladies that they interviewed, and they said that the New York reporters had lied about the fact that Donald Trump had treated them poorly. So then it brings up this whole issue of Jeff Epstein and Orgy Island, Little St. James Island in the British or the American Virgin Islands. So we've got that out there. Hillary seems to be damaged, and I don't know. And I've actually got a friend of mine in the studio. I might ask for an opinion. What, Russ has traveled over from California. Russ, what do you what's your take on the race? How are you horse handicapping it right now?
Well, I think that Trump sure seems to have the momentum. You know, a year ago, if somebody said, you know, what do you think Trump's chances are? It'd be zero, right?
Yeah.
And if you look where he's come from and where he is now, how can you doubt?
How can you doubt him?
How could you doubt? I mean, will he make it? Does he have an end game that's really going to, you know, make up for some of his deficiencies earlier on? You know, maybe not. But it's all these people that are handicapping have been saying he can't do it. It's kind of crazy given what he just did.
Well, what do you make of the fact that each person who goes after him somehow is damaged? You know, it's, you know, somebody writes this article and then it, you know, Trump is gone now. He's insulted women. He's insulted Mexicans. Done this or that, and these people fall by the wayside, and it's still happening. And now you've got Hillary with an enormous closet full of stuff that every time you open the door, it falls out on her. And Trump is looking more and more bulletproof. I don't know how he does it.
He's got a little bit of Teflon around him, apparently.
All right. So how does Russ is from California. How does the business community that your friends out there, Russ has a business out there, What are they saying about this? Their hopes or aspirations or fears about the Trump candidacy?
Well, if you're talking outside the media and Hollywood business in Los Angeles, then I think a lot of conservative businessmen are ready to give him a chance at this point, because you look at the alternatives and they don't see that as anything, you know, Hillary or Bernie.
Yeah. So I think he's got the momentum, and the thing that I think that is a mistake for Hillary is to keep going after him and starting these kind of these barnyard squabbles, and you know, bringing up the fact that Bill Clinton was accused of rape 20 or 30 years ago, 40 years ago, whatever it was, is a terrible background for Hillary to play out her campaign against.
Absolutely.
So,
I agree.
So your prediction is Trump.
If I had to go with something right now, yeah, I think he's on the trajectory.
So how are things in California, by the way, the economy, the weather, the drought?
Well, the drought's still there. We got more of an average rainfall this year, but that wasn't enough to really bring things up. So, you know, for many years, I've been a ZPG, zero population growth kind of guy.
I gotcha.
So the more people you put in there, you know, gee, guess what? We're running out of stuff.
It's a desert.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's a desert, but the Sierra Nevada, snow locker is refilled accordingly.
A little bit, but not. They keep saying not enough. We're going to need an ice age before they say we got enough water.
Okay, again. I got you. And Governor Brown is going to. You went from Governor Gray to Governor Brown and had Schwarzenegger in between, but he still got his 25% reduction, right?
Yeah, as far as I know, that's still going.
All right, folks. 7:57 and. Just kind of unnerving with this story from Egypt, the plane coming down, and it makes you wonder how safe these security measures are. Okay. Of course, it's a little bit different over in the in Europe, but they did have three air marshals on that flight, so that's got to be alarming. Some other stories for you. There is the issue of the new law that Obama has come up with in terms of overtime. We can get into that next week. And anyway, thanks for tuning in. It's been a pleasure spending some time with you. And I have been in contact with Mark D'Antonio, district attorney. He's going to be coming on next week. We'll get to James Dickens back. We're supposed to have a debate between those two. My goal is to have every candidate that's running locally on the show, and you know, some of them might be a little bit harder to get on, such as Jeff Steinborn, etc., although he's been on the show a few times before. But we'll get these people on, and we'll get them so they can answer some questions when you call in, and kind of defend their positions, I guess. But anyway, we'll take you out here with a little bit of Pat Metheny from the spectacular album Travels. 7:59 Kelly O'Connell AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 and 805-618-80 to text to write down for next week. Have a great weekend. See you in 2 days. Ciao.
attempt